And I'm here with Krista Smith. We had Krista's husband like four episodes ago, Marty Smith, which is right here with us. Krista, it's a pleasure to have you here again. Every time it's a pleasure to receive you, to know that you're here. I'm really glad to see you. How has your trip been? How has your day been?
My day's been great. I have been up a long time, but the travel was good. Took a nap on the plane, so it was good to be back in Honduras. Good to see you, Marco, and your brother.
Where did you, like, you went from Atlanta, you were saying, from Atlanta to
Miami, and then Miami to Honduras.
How many hours did you stay in Miami?
Maybe an hour layover. Not too bad.
Okay.
From
Miami to Honduras.
I'm sorry.
From Miami to Honduras?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. And then you had to drive
over. And then we drove. So it takes a little over an hour to get to the city.
Okay. You told me you used to travel directly, right, from Atlanta?
We used to travel directly when we flew Delta. Now we're flying American. So we have a layover in Miami.
That has to come back.
We want Delta to come back. Yes, so much easier. So much easier. So, yeah, we actually took our daughter to the airport yesterday as well. She is in Rome. And so we took her, went home, got in the bed, got back up, went back to the airport this morning. But it's worth it. It's good. It was a good travel day.
And we're going to Tizate tomorrow. At what time are we leaving? Have we figured out that yet?
Suni has a doctor's appointment, I think, at 10 with Ashley. So it'll be hopefully around lunch.
Okay.
When we can get out or leave to go to Tizate.
That's good. So for the people that's listening that maybe did not see the previous episode, Krista and Marty have this ministry called Project World in the States, right?
Mm-hmm. Project
Which
World.
Which is Mission 922. That's the Honduran ministry. Mm-hmm. Brother, what would be the term? Brother ministry?
I would say they're married. Yes. Married. Okay. Yes. So it's Project World Mission 922. Project World was first, and Mission 922 came along as ministry was more in depth, I guess, in Honduras. So that's when that footprint came along. So I would say they're married.
And you've been working down here in Honduras for about how many years now?
Oh, gosh, Marco, you're gonna let me tell my age. It's been a while. Honestly, I think maybe 2007 was Marty's first trip. And it was several years later that I started coming. And I came spring break and summer because I was in education and I worked. And Marty's job was a little bit more flexible, so he could come and spend more time. But we've been really invested every year, multiple times a year since 2017. So it was pretty much once or twice a year for me since 2011. But 2017, 2018... that was when really Project World was birthed in the States. And that was really when I started coming more and being more involved.
And what was it like from your perspective? Like Marty's first trip, because he mentioned a little bit about his experience, but you as a missionary's wife, or at the moment, you know, not knowing what the future had for you guys, your experience or his experience, your experience through his experience, how is it like? Like, imagine him having a revelation, something that's going to be pivotal for your lives. And you having to adventure yourself to experience, like being open-minded to experience it by your own self and then getting invested into it and doing it together. But how's that first contact? How's that first time?
You know, it didn't come easy for me. Marty came and I was fine. I told him, I said, that's your thing. You go, you do. I'm good. I'm going to stay here in the States where it's comfortable. Yeah. And I'm good. And it was several years after he went that our oldest daughter decided she wanted to come, Hannah. And I was like, oh, now I'm going to have to go because my daughter wants to go. So we got her a ticket, and then I decided I would go, you know, along for the ride. And then our youngest, our whole family was like, I cannot believe you're going to leave Sarah at home. Sarah was 9 at the time. Hannah was, I guess she would have been 12 at the time, 11, 12. And anyway, we decided at the last minute that we would let Sarah go, the 9-year-old, so we could all four go together, because our family really was kind of giving us grief of, I can't believe you're going to leave her at home. And we couldn't get a ticket. And then like 2 weeks out, someone broke their leg that was coming on the trip. So we thought, okay, this is just God's way of saying Sarah needs to go. Poor man, broke his leg, sorry. And when we went to buy the ticket from him to transfer the name, he had already given it to someone else. So we were like, okay, maybe we missed that. Seriously, a week later, someone came up and couldn't come on the trip, and we were able to purchase that ticket for Sarah. So we all four came together. It was impactful. But just experiencing it through my children, looking really at pictures of them and how they engaged. I can't say that I was automatically like, yes, I'm in 100%, but I was in to serve in whatever capacity that looked like. So, you know, there again, we just would come back. I mean, Marty was like, we want to go back, and the girls wanted to come back. So we pretty much made it a yearly goal, is we would come back every year. And then people knew that we were coming, and they were kind of like, we really love to go with you. So we were like, okay, just come on and go with us. And of course, we went with the church as well, the church that we were involved in at that time. So it just kind of evolved. It just happened. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what we were doing. Yeah. We still don't know what we're doing.
You dip your toe a little bit, and you think it's gonna, for me, a summer thing. It's gonna be a summer thing, mm-hmm. and then you start getting more involved, or it starts becoming more a part of you, and all of a sudden it's your main thing.
It's kind of like, okay, we weren't looking for Honduras. Honduras found us. That's usually the way that I describe it. Like I said, I was working. Marty was working. I'm an educator, retired at this time. But at the time, I worked all during the summer. So it wasn't like I was a teacher and I was off. I was an administrator. So I was still working during the summer. So it was a hard, like, when I was off, I was really coming here. Mm-hmm. To Honduras. And so it really did become a commitment, and it was just sort of the way we did life. It was like, okay, we're going on vacation. Well, we're going to go to Honduras, and we're going to spend a week, and we may build a house or, you know, serve in some capacity. And then after that, maybe we'll go on vacation. You know, we've been to the Roatán before, just kind of added that to the trip. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we came here, and it was kind of like a vacation. It was just the four of us, and we would come down and help with other teams. I remember one trip in particular, we were in a truck, just the four of us. We had gone out to eat, just kind of doing life in Honduras. It was kind of cool, you know? And a guy jumped on the back of the truck, scared the girls, scared me. We're screaming, yelling, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what in the world have we gotten our family into? And, you know, it all worked out. But that was a fun summer, because the girls ended up coming back at different times doing internships with different ministries. So it really just became a way of life.
I think it's a good way. It's interesting how God works. Because I don't know how you would have reacted. I don't know if it happened actually, but imagine maybe just Marty out of a first experience, or you out of a first experience, thinking or even imagining coming down here every month or being invested the way you are invested now. It was like a progressive investment, right? Like, little by little, you started, you dip your toe into it. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, it starts to become part of you. And all of a sudden, something like moving that, well, I don't know if in the future, you know, who knows? Or maybe not, but moving down here, because there, you know, there's a lot of missionaries, you know, mm-hmm. that live down here, or people like you guys that come very often, mm-hmm. or are very invested in the, I would say, the country, but we're a very small country, that the community you're invested. So I think it makes it more fathomable. It makes it more, mm-hmm. in a way, you adapt, you can adjust to the concept, to the idea, and little by little, you start to see the culture, see the ways. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the future, you know the language. I mean, who knows?
Who knows, Marco? Yeah, I should have practiced Spanish a long time ago when I was younger, and we were bringing teams, and the kids would laugh at me, though, so I would get embarrassed, and I didn't practice. I did have a guy tell me at the airport today, though. He said, "You come so often, and you know so little Spanish." And I'm like, I know, it's so sad.
But I'm sure you'll get there. I'm really sure you'll get there.
You know, I'm just praying God's going to just feed me with that wisdom of Spanish, that it's just going to one day just appear, and I'm going to practice.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do better. But yeah, it is. It is little by little. It is the way of life. It's what we do as a family. We kind of have the saying is this is just what we do. So we're invested, and it's become more and more and more. And I've always told the story of spiritually, Marty has always been the leader of our family, which he should be as the father of our, you know, my children and my husband. He has always been our spiritual leader, but I've always just kind of held on to his shirt tail, you know, whatever he did, then I was supporting him. But probably the last, I would say year and a half, Krista has her own things. Yeah. And it's not just the relationship that Marty has with God or Christ. It is my relationship. Mm-hmm. And I've always had a relationship, but I've never, I guess, owned it like mm-hmm. I do now, or experienced it like I do now. Mm-hmm. God has been so good to me, and I'll try not to cry, because you know me, I start opening my mouth and the tears start flying. But
crying is an option.
He's been really, really good to me in so many avenues of my life, like so many avenues. There are so many stories that I could tell you where he just moved. There's no other way to explain it. I'm like, you can't deny that he moved, or you can't deny that he spoke, or you can't deny that he was right in the middle of every situation, whether it be in the United States or in Honduras. I remember one time we were giving out food in a community, and it was hot. Oh my gosh, it was so hot. And we had walked up, like, I don't know, it just seemed like we had walked a really long time, and we were all out of water. And I literally got on my hands and knees and thought, Lord, if you will get me off this hill, I'm not coming back up here. But in the midst of all of this, we had missed a lady that was not at her house that we could give food to. And, you know, she was running after us, trying to catch us to get food. And I, you know, God just kind of broke me right there that I've never had to run after food. I've never had to, honestly, I've never had to pray, okay, Lord, I'm going to need food tomorrow on my table to feed my children. And those are things that I've personally experienced in Honduras. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's just a lot of things that have, taught me a lot about life here, but then also I'm a very, rule oriented person. Like I like order, mm-hmm. I like structure. Mm-hmm. And
well, part of being, you know, in the education system for how many years? Well,
29.
29. Give up your age, but yeah, 29. That's
a long time.
More than my lifetime. Yeah, so 29 years of and from what I remember, sometimes that's why I didn't fit in a little bit, because it was, you know, but it's good, sets good foundation, may help me not go rogue. But, you know, it's there's a schema, there's a rule, there's a parameter, there's a structure to follow, there's a itinerary, right? Mm-hmm. If that's the way you work every day, it gets to be part of you.
Right. But Honduras has really done a lot for me in getting me to realize that sometimes you need to not get the cart before the horse. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes God has a different plan, mm-hmm. and it may not look like structure. Yeah. It may look like organized chaos. Or it may look like stopping for the one. I mean, it just seems like every time we're here, something comes up. Like we have a plan. Mm-hmm. We try to come with a plan in order to move ministry forward. but it seems like things will happen, not bad things, but things will happen or pop up. And it's just like God's just completely stripping away those things of where my human side gets in my way. And it's like, just keep your eyes focused on me, Krista. I will make a way. All those things that you want to get done, I'll take care of those things. You just keep your eyes focused on me.
Many times I felt he's trying to tell me, I don't want you to rely on your system, on your structure. Because like you said, many times it's easier, or we think, or you tend to reduce probability of failure, the margin of error, when you have a plan, when you have a structure. But whenever I did not know, or things did not work out the way I planned them, or things fell into place in ways I didn't even fathom or even, thought possible. And I get exposed to these strange ways that God deals with my life. Mm-hmm. And there's always a lesson behind that. In my case, it has been, he wants me to rely on him above, any structure, any other resource. And he meets us where we are, right? Because that's the way he teaches me that lesson. He teaches the same lesson maybe to someone else in a different way, according to their season, according to their circumstances. But that has been a thing that God has spoken to my life. He wants me to rely on him as my provider, as my safety net, as my everything, more than on my plans. Maybe because I tend to plan, or I can be square-minded sometimes, right? There's other people that are not that way, and there's a different way he deals with that. But in my case, it's crazy to see how God works things out. And in the end, I see myself like a steward, what God made. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it was something cool, something great happened, even in better or in the best way possible, or ways that I didn't imagine. And in the end, you cannot steal credit. And I know, I'm very aware, I'm very conscious of that. A lot of the stuff going around me, if I plan for it, or if I use rational thinking, or there's a lot of things I did not in a proper manner. I was premature in some processes. I did some mistakes. I learned through those mistakes. I don't say I didn't, but all of that has work for the purpose,
for your good.
Exactly, and to get me to where I'm at right now in my relationship with God.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That was so just simply this week I had a lot going on before we could leave today. Yes, we did leave this morning very early.
Yesterday for us.
Yesterday for you. This morning for me, and I kind of had my week planned out, and I literally one day thought, I have no idea how all of these things are going to get accomplished. And all of these things fell right into place in such a random way. And I could not deny. I called Marty and I said, the Lord made a way where there was no way. No. There was seriously no way to get all of these things done. And that's just the beauty of where he is. It's kind of like the simplicity of, if you will commune with me, this is the Father speaking to me, the Heavenly Father. And if you will stay in my word, I'll make a way. Mm-hmm. I'll take care of things. He just tends to work things out. And, I still get in the way and think, how are we going to get this done? Mm-hmm. And I really just have to keep coming back to just keep your eyes on him. Mm-hmm. Keep your eyes on him.
And give yourself out of your own way, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like I said, just steward in the moment. But I feel he's already written it. He equips you. Because many times that has been the source of my unbelief, anxiety, or whatever. And then he just comes forth, and he's faithful, and it encourages me for the process. And whenever something comes up, or I visualize something, or I feel he's putting something in my heart, I can go to that precedent or recall that experience and rely on his character. Okay, no, he doesn't. He's immutable. He hasn't changed from that time, and he's gonna show me this time. And you start to kind of, you know, through your relationship and trial and error, you start to know him, know his ways, know his character a little bit more.
That's really cool that you say that, because, well, your experiences shape you, period. But from a pastor that we had years ago, it was during that time where I really learned everything that you experience in your life is really not for you. It's for you to be able to give to someone else. Your experiences shape who you are in order to help someone else. Just simple example. So I was diagnosed with breast cancer, 2 years ago. And right now I'm ministering to like four different women, four different friends that are experiencing the same exact things, some of the same exact things that I went through. Now, was it tough? Yes. But did the Lord give me strength and courage? And I will still go back to that moment that all of those experiences are helping me to be able to minister to them now. Mm-hmm. And also just kind of jumping off of that, right now, what's heavy for me is living with a heart of gratitude, truly just thanking him for his grace, just his mercy, just the experiences that he gives me. He never said it was going to be easy. So even through the tough times, I can't deny that he was right there with me the entire time. In those moments, it just becomes really real of the goodness that he has for each of us and the good things that he wants for us. And, how to articulate that and make that real for someone else is, I just think he's working on me, you know?
You have to live through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's something you have to experience for yourself. Many times, whenever I see interests that I have or visions, and I see those visions, they start from where I'm at right now, like all of my experiences, my knowledge. So for example, if I have an interest in particular that I want to pursue in a research, in a master's degree, there's a lot of things that I had to experience to get to a point where I want to adventure in that type of project or whatever, because it shaped me in a way and it helped me understand the other end of the spectrum. For example, neuroscience or psychology. I never thought twice about those subjects in high school or whatever. And I didn't, you're a punk kid. You don't pay attention in class and stuff. But now I like to consume a lot of information, knowledge, because it's become practical use to my daily life, like for performance, for mental and physical stability, for everything, for being a more productive human being, person, being in a better spot. I would have never even wonder or be felt excited about those subjects if I wouldn't have experienced a burnout or what it's like to be tired or, what it's like to need to pull yourself up and need those energy levels and those good mind states just to be a good fella to your neighbor, to your, in your case, your spouse, in my case, my parents, my brother. So it got me to a point where that became an interest, and a lot of projects, ideas that I visualize now, that's the foundation. I mean, I can conceptualize or even fathom desiring these projects because of the experience, the good and the bad experiences that led me to a point that I would even think that's something interesting, or that there would be a purpose in me to, help others out. Like, okay, wow, this is so useful. Like, just... In my case, you could do it. Some people meditate. It's a form of meditation. The way in the mornings, I tell my devotional, read some scripture, etc. it's a way to, it helps me. It's, people say express gratitude. I don't know. For me, it's like a cocktail. It's all in once. I express gratitude. I acknowledge my maker, the creation, the goodness he has in my life and the blessings I have around me. I also try to know him a little bit more. So it helps me then, you know, maybe a cold shower, stuff like that, which is for me, when I'm in those stable states, mind states, spiritual states, physical states, I imagine a civilization, you know, that's more productive, or that would be better, just a kinder civilization. Someone that is in a good mindset or mind state to be good to others, right? And if we could all get to a point where we feel healthy emotionally, physically, I think it would be more suitable to love your neighbor, to, you know, to do effective gospel or ministry. And that's now an interest that I have through all of those experiences, good and bad, needing to self-regulate myself, or just being in a good state where I acknowledge, okay, this is more of this. We need more of this in me. I need more of this in others. I need to project more of this. I need to transmit more of this, right? Sorry that I ramble a little bit into that, but I just feel it, and it's, I believe it a lot, because it's been, and now it's a thing that, imagine just majoring or getting a master's in it. And I used to see education as work. Man, that would be just interesting for me. Like, thank God, everything that I'm doing, like, for work right now, I just look at it as an interesting project. Either it's donating time, donating money, or starting a new business, or help having a cup of coffee with your family, whatever new project in relationships and projects, whatever area you have. But all of those projects that now I can get invested into have been shaped from my previous experience, right? But I also feel God in the process was taking me hand by hand, like exposing me to all of these situations.
Absolutely.
Because he needed me in a point that I could understand, you know, mm-hmm. people that you're going to be addressing or people you're going to be helping out. You never know, like, how can you approach, you can approach someone from, you know, that's struggling with something you haven't. But if you have walked their shoes and you know what worked for you and you know what are the good solutions for, it's just, you know, more impactful. And I think that's why God exposes us to all of this, to be in a point where we can replicate and just through others grow. And that's why it goes beyond us, right?
Well, and I think he wants us to be still. To I try to be super intentional with listening to his voice. Down to the simple, in my car, okay, Lord, you want me to go right or left today? I got to get home somehow, but do you want me to go right or left? And when I am really intentional, you know, prayer is a big thing for me. Marty and I have really dug into praying in the Spirit. We really try to pray together daily. I typically get up, go work out. Marty, I come back. We have quiet time together, and then we pray together. I don't know. I just felt like the Lord just wanted us there. He wanted us to work on our relationship together. Not that it was bad or anything, but just we're learning that we're one and that our ministry needs us to be one and needs us to be strong together as one. This is kind of making sense. It makes sense in my mind, but sometimes just to articulate it, it's hard, but it is an evolving thing. So we're praying together purposefully, intentionally for the day, for things that are going on in our life, rather than just kind of thinking about it, mm-hmm. but just speaking out loud and praying out loud and being grateful for those things out loud. And you can just see God moving. I mean, Marty and I have friends. I don't even know why they like us. I mean, honestly, and it's just like God has given us these people that are pouring into our lives. I mean, pouring into our lives in spiritual wisdom, just friendship relationships, learning how to, you know, it's really all about relationships. We were having a conversation even before we started the podcast, and you were talking about people that you've met that have helped you progress further in your podcast or in your business. And, you know, you just start looking around and you think, or Marty and I are thinking, we have so many people that feed into our lives, in our ministry, in our marriage, in just friendship, in spiritual growth. I mean, there are so many avenues, and it's pretty remarkable when you start really thinking about, 5 years ago, we weren't where we are now. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, 5 years before then, I don't know, when I've got an opportunity to speak to some, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders at the end of the month. And I've really been kind of thinking about, you know, what do you tell 6th, 7th, and 8th graders? And part of it is just about, relationships. It matters. Your kindness matters. You know, the wisdom that they have, they're all smart kids. And, you know, those are things that you have and they're easy, but, learning to challenge yourself just because you feel like, things that are coming to you, I think there's, it's not just random. It's not just happenstance.
Mm-hmm. You're just part of something bigger, right?
You're part of something bigger. And putting all of those pieces together, challenging myself to do things that I've never done before because I feel like the Lord wants me there, then I've got to make a commitment for that. Okay, that could be speaking Spanish. I mean, you know, I need that language barrier drives me crazy. It makes me nuts that I can't communicate exactly what I want to be able to communicate just to the women out in Tasati. We've tried to start the women's, you know, ministry, and you've been so wonderful to help us just be able to communicate with them. But I feel like if I could speak their language, that I could be more effective. Mm-hmm. But going back to just things that come up in my life, it would be super easy to say, you know, yeah, I think I'll just stay where I am because it's comfortable, mm-hmm. and I don't really have to challenge myself. But I really kind of have a saying of today, I move things forward. Mm-hmm. I went one step, and it's just one step at a time. So I'm really trying to really focus on intentionally being present in the moment. And work on relationships and really pondering on what those relationships are and being an active participant in those relationships, if that makes sense.
And in my case, you know, that's why conscientiousness is a good psychological trait, because you have to be aware of what's going on. But if you are aware, like I sense you are, or in the way you express yourself, if you are aware of how God puts the resources, like he gives the provision for the purpose or the calling he gives you, he gives the provision. That might be a relationship. That might be a, you know, it could be a person. It could be an institution. It could be a conversation, whatever. But God meets the need because it's his work. You just have to be obedient and intentional in, you know, accepting your role and your call in it and play your part. But he puts the people in the way, because whenever you see a great task, because he does great things, And that's why there's a lot of stories in the Bible that whenever you read them, like maybe sounds like a fairy tale, you know, Elijah, Lord, open his eyes, let him look all of the ones who are for us. You don't remember that story. It would be good, or it's good if you do. In those moments where you feel overpowered, right? It could be by a threat, or it could be by something that you have to do, and it's just challenging. But when you are conscientious to see, okay, if you gave a step, there's intentionality in that step. So give a step, and you see how God backs that step, backs you up, backs his word, backs his work. Then you start knowing him more, and then you get more encouraged to give the next step. and he starts meeting you where you are. And then if you are conscientious and aware of what's going on, you just get this sense of, I'm just part of something bigger. This is my role. Lord, please give me discernment to do it in the best way possible. But let yourself go. Be intentional in the process. Because he's going to give you the resources. He's going to give you the relationships. He's going to give you everything. You're just going to have to play your part. And because he loves your authentic self, most of the times that's going to be you expressing yourself authentically through your work, through your relationships. And that's a good thing, that he wants us to live in that freedom, right? For you. And also the seasons, how he meets you where you are. Because the season you are right now is different than the season you were in 2007 or 2017, you know?
Oh, by far.
By far. And he makes everything fall into place in a way that seems godly.
Because people do, they'll say, like, how did you get into ministry? And honestly, I told Marty, I said, lots of times people will say, so what do you do in Honduras? And I'm like, well, you know, we have a nonprofit in the States and we have a ministry in Honduras. But being able to say we have a ministry, that was kind of a big hurdle for me, because I just wanted to say, you know, it's kind of a nonprofit and, you know, we're there to serve people, you know, we're there mm-hmm. to serve, but it's a ministry. Mm-hmm. It is a calling. Mm-hmm. And exactly what you just said is me personally, I've had to take responsibility for the calling that God has given us and, play an active part in it and not just let Marty carry the burden of, and I hate to say burden, that's probably not a good word, but carry the weight of the entire ministry himself, mm-hmm. that I've taken a part in that. And since that time, it's like, you know, little opportunities here and little opportunities here just to share more about the ministry, share more about what's going on in Honduras, and to be a part of other ministries. So it's been an exciting year. It's been a lot of growth in myself personally, spiritually, personally, as well as our ministry.
And that's great that you have found your role into it, because imagine, like, for me as a man, I can position myself in my 50s. I can get a glance of it, not the actual thing, but, you know, taking care of or managing is hard. Leadership is hard. You start by small roles, well, not small roles, but basic examples like being a parent, being a father as a leadership role, right? You have to, God molds you through that. Then imagine managing an institution, a corporation, managing a group of people, a collective of people. And now doing that for the poor in a third world country, having to travel miles away. I mean, and we can go on in the list, adding up of the toughness that it can get to be, where culture is different. I mean, institutionality is not that it's different. Sometimes there's none, and getting exposed to that, like, okay, lead this or manage this, or I've experienced some headaches, like external things getting into your head, and I know you grow through that, like it's resilience. I don't know, it might be physiologically a way to prove this, but it's like a muscle, right? It builds up through, like a callus, through constant use of it. But imagine being exposed to different, whatever he gets to be exposed to, and having that, say, what would be the word, assurance that your partner or your beloved, your special someone, right, is in it for the long run with you. Like, mm-hmm. you have someone you can share this with, because I'm a single guy, right? And I think, like we mentioned, seasons, I'm in a season, that's how I want to be, that's why I like to be for the moment, but I can get to experience different burdens or different loads or whatever of work. But a glance of whatever every man that needs to lead a collective of people has to expose himself to, right? So whenever I see and I am conscientious or aware of my circumstance, I'm like, oh, okay, so that's why God instituted marriage. Oh, okay, that, oh, yeah, it would be nice. I mean, I'm picking the way that I want someone. I mean, the physical aspect is important for me, right? But not just the physical aspect, that, and not only the chemistry, you know, but the values, the purposes that align. And we can get picky with all of these matters, right? But that, sorry that I ramble. That's not the point. What I'm getting at is it makes sense in my head how this would be nice to have a partner, you know, with whom you can build and procreate little, you know, humans that come from you that can carry on with your legacy, maybe in your ministry or wherever they go, right? With your name, they can carry on this. And if we get into relationships and marriage and all the whole deepness and spiritual purpose behind it, there's a lot of profoundness, but just having someone who you can not struggle, but deal with this, someone who you have in the battle to go by your side, to pick you up, or even simply just to, we have a word here, this our lesson, you know, just release pressure.
Just to share the burden.
Share the burden, right?
Encourage.
Exactly. And that's great that you're at a point that you acknowledge that. Because that's, we can take it for granted, but imagine there's people, I know a lot of people where faith is not in the midst, or they have different ideologies, different. It's very, very tough when you both try to, you know, pull your own way. And I feel this task, project, deed, work, or whatever, Mission 922, Project World, what the vision that God has behind it, it needs, you know, that strength. It's a strength that, I mean, a person is very, I believe there's very strong people out there, like mentally resilient, but the more the merrier in terms of strength, like literally, the more mass, the merrier, the more brains to put thoughts on whatever situation, the better, the different, you know, the more, the merrier in every sense, because it's not just more, but it makes it more complex. You can look at situations from different perspectives, the female perspective, the male perspective, and you share the faith. So you play a very important active role in the ministry through Marty and through your own personal activities.
Well, and the cool part is that we do share a lot. Typically, when I have a bad day, Marty is the one that is the encourager. And if he has a bad day, then I can encourage him. I think we work really well together. We're one. And kind of going back to just God just keeps putting people in our midst. For you, for example, just you, I mean, that are helping us with our ministry, just playing a significant part to the delicacy of the different components of the ministry, the growth of the ministry. Marty and I aren't smart enough to do this. There's no way. I mean, I told somebody the other day, I said, we were just the only ones crazy enough to say, yes, Lord, we will go. We will commit. You know, we could have gone anywhere in the world, and we've chosen to come here. We could have done a whole lot of things during our lifetime. But we've chosen to invest here. It's important. And I still go back to that we didn't choose Honduras, but Honduras chose us. I mean, it's the last time that we had a team here and we left the city and we drove out to Tusati, and I think you were out there when I said this, but I got anxious because it was a big team. We'd not had that big of a team in a while. And when we got out there, it was so dusty. And I thought, oh my gosh, these people are going to think, what in the world? Like, where have you brought us? And it was just like the dust settled, and not literally. It never settles, but it was really like it just settled. And it was like, okay, we're home.
it was peaceful. And I just felt like it, and it was nothing but the Lord's presence. It was nothing but His presence just saying, don't get before me. I've got this, but you're going to have to let me just slow down. Marty and I tend to get in a hurry mm-hmm. about everything because we have a plan and we have an agenda and we're learning just to slow down and be in His presence. Just, you talk about meditating. I like to just be quiet. I love it in my car when really there's no radio, there's no nada. It's just quiet. And I feel like, you know, the Lord can just speak to me about things or bring things to my attention. And I'm learning that when He does, then I'm making notes of those things, that it's not just, oh, that was a random thought. No, that could have been something significant. And it's kind of like, you know, you have a friend and that friend's name kind of runs through your mind. And I'm learning to stop and at least make a note of that or text that friend and say, hey, just had you on my mind. Just wanted to let you know. And time again, you know, the person on the other end says, oh, wow, this was perfect timing. I needed that word of encouragement, or I needed this, or I needed that. And, you know, I just can't deny that that's not the Lord, and that I'm not right where He wants me to be at that very moment. Mm-hmm. It's just good. It's a good place to be, you know?
When you mention He puts you in the midst of all of this, relationships or people, that's why you need His presence. That's why you need His help, because there is no way in heaven mm-hmm. that I would have imagined doing things that I do now if someone tells me to do them. However, whenever He brings a strong conviction internally in your heart, there's nothing stopping from it from happening, you know? And that's the most effective way to work on someone, and it's a way you cannot work without the help of God. Because how can I make you be convicted of something without the Holy Ghost, right? He's the one that brings conviction. So all these people that get on board and you know, for example, Jorge the other day mentioned in his testimony, how can I make, because I know how the world works, I don't know if I would intentionally ask someone to do that, like, do this for me and there will be no reward. But for someone to get to the point of conviction, I am going to willingly volunteer to do this because I have this strong conviction that God, who is my creator, that loves me, that gave me freedom, that saved me, wants me to do this. And I do it because of that, not because of money. A basic example. I can never do that. Maybe there's people that are very crafty, influential, whatever, and they can trick someone into that or him. I don't know. But imagine having that power behind you that unites purposes, because you get to unite with people along the way and then you start walking together, right? But to get to that person to that point, you wouldn't have made it possible. Whoever helps me or collaborates with me on whatever project in my life, when I say project, I mean my whatever I do with my ministry time, whatever I do with my business or whatever, all of those people, I know God put them in a position or in a place that was suitable for my purpose in a specific season in my life. And whenever I met that person, God intended that to happen. And He starts putting all of these people that, like I mentioned, these previous workers that I have, I can never force them to be, you could force them to be punctual, but for them to be convicted that I need to preserve my job because there's ethics behind this, because ethics matter, because God took them to a point where now in this season of my life, I need someone like that, and God makes that connection, that God makes it happen whenever, and wherever you least expected it for it to come. You're just, You know when you lose your keys and then you do something else and then you start looking for that something else and you find your keys, but you don't find
exactly. I've had to pray, Lord, please help me find my keys.
Well, that has been many times the process, the Lord, what he has done for me. I mean, I'm out of not nowhere, but wherever I least expected the most, that's where he comes forth.
Mm-hmm. That's where I have to, instead of, just use the example for looking for the keys. Right now, I'm still looking for my glasses. I've lost them. But it's like stopping and saying, instead of me trying to find the glasses, Lord, you know where my glasses are. You know I need those glasses. So please help me find those glasses. Even the simple things, he wants good things for us. And that's why he does put people in our paths to build relationships and to have those connections and those times of fellowship and things, because that's what makes us who we are. Mm-hmm. I had something on my mind and I forgot what it was.
It will come back to you.
Hopefully it will. It will come back. I don't know, Marco. You know, I'm a little older than you are. It didn't come back quite as quick.
I lose stuff a lot. I don't know what. It happens to be a lot. Maybe me being an overthinker, I don't know. But I have a thousand thoughts, and at my 25 years old, sometimes I lose a thread. It gets back to
me. I tend to write things down. Like I'm a writer, and I hope to write a book one day. I really, really, really want to write a book, and I really feel like the Lord will give me the courage and the knowledge to do that.
Hopefully.
I think he's actually already given it to me. I think it's just Krista needs to take a step forward and be intentional, make a commitment.
And it's a tough barrier. I've read about, I do a lot of reading because of, for the creative nature, like the nature of the process of creativity. How there's a lot of creative barriers that you think you will struggle with by yourself, but they're very universal. And we like these laws, like, you know, procrastination, anxiety, whatever. Creativity has a lot of barriers, and writing a book, that's a big one. That I've listened to a lot of authors speak about how writing a book, but it can be so impactful. Like for you, it could be such a great personal benefit, because you're thinking. When you're writing, you're thinking. You're exposing yourself to your thoughts. You're putting them like materially on paper, and then you edit them, and then you filter whatever ideas you have, and it can speak to you as it can speak to people in the future. So you should.
I probably should. Well, and you just said exposure.
Imagine all of your experiences in Honduras. You can upload those pictures.
If I could remember all of those.
Yeah.
But I do think
time. You have time.
I think that is where the beauty of a relationship with the Father is being vulnerable. I mean, exposure. You just said the word, and it just reminded me of sometimes. Just within sharing all of those things that we've experienced, we do have to become vulnerable. We do have to expose ourselves, whether it be expose yourself to something new or expose yourself to be able to, bring darkness to light, so to speak, through our relationships, through just getting, just sharing with others that all those things. And we've met so many just really cool people throughout the years being in Honduras, and just a lot of connections there.
And also how he is aware of your circumstances. Like, it sounds very cliche, but he meets you where you are, in the sense that if you let yourself go, like if you, I don't know how to explain it, but I know you understand when I say let yourself, you know, just, You even told me, gave me a little bit of a story, some insight on this, putting decisions in the hands of God, and how God, according to your circumstances, where you are in life, he makes everything fall into place and actually shows you his favor in terms of doing his work. Like, he favors his work. So many times I am so grateful, for example, that I can get to do what I do. and it doesn't hinder me. I mean, there's a lot of intentionality in the process. Mm-hmm. Like I had to arrange some stuff or pay some prices in the past, or I'm still paying prices to have the accessibility, but I know everything, like God intended this to happen. He gives me the opportunities. He gives me the ideas. And in the midst of it, he favors his work. So he allows me to be part of something that makes me feel realized, makes me feel good. And whenever something was changing seasonally in my life, he met me there. He adapted. Like there's grace also like for adaptation, right? So to do whatever you do right now, and after, like you said, years and years in the education industry, you were a superintendent, something like that, principal,
assistant.
Mm-hmm. Assistant superintendent, your whole life, maybe on a younger age, you know, with little girls. I mean, but even though, like, God met you where you were in all of those seasons, and now you're at a season where God meets your needs, or he favors his work, and, mm-hmm. and you are part of his work down here. So he takes care of everything around Krista for you to be in a more suitable spot to work and do ministry down here and be part of the work that is his work, but you're part of it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the day I retired, I didn't know I was retiring, and he gave me the opportunity. I mean, I heard him loud and clear. You can go or you can stay.
That's a perfect spot. I mean, it can sound, you know, retirement. It sounds very, if you look at the general term, like, okay, I'm retiring. I'm finished working or whatever. But actually now I have the time because, you know, your girls are grown up. Mm-hmm. Everything is set into place for you to get fully invested the way you want to be invested, or you need to be invested in all of the development and growth that has come through that. Like, because I can not fathom you being exposed to this type of experiences. I was trying to explain it to a friend the other day, the mission experience, like,
right.
It's, and if you're constantly getting exposed to it, it shapes you, like not only, you know, a one-time thing, but it starts to shape you and you start to grow in the process. And you're at a point right now that you're spiritually or professionally or in a place where you want to be, and you have the means to be there because God aligned everything for it to work out this way. He takes care of everything.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are time and time and time again that he has just, I mean, things have just lined completely up. Absolutely.
And don't you feel, because you were many years, you mentioned something, did you, or is that your daughter, work with special
needs? Well, my daughter works with special needs, but I also worked with special needs kids for like 12 years.
Do you think, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence, because many times we relate the term transcendent or legacy to something. I mean, it can be something as meeting the needs of a special needs mm-hmm. kid coming down to Honduras. And there is grandeur in that, but there's no need for it to be something so exposed to be transcendent, like mm-hmm. whatever impact you have on that kid. And you've been exposed to this type of work your whole life. And
right.
Now your daughter has this calling or this vocation to help, because that's what you do here. Help the one with the most, not the most needs, but that cannot help himself out, yeah, you know?
Exactly.
And it's the same, kind of the same drill with someone that maybe has a disadvantage mentally or physically for mm-hmm. because of some medical reason. And you constantly being called to these purposes that, like I said, transcend whatever regular life is, because you don't need to be an abroad missionary, but you also are. But so Marty gets called to do this. And then your daughter, I assume the experience of coming to Honduras, and I spoke a little bit with her about her personal experience, and it also had an impact on her. So like nothing is coincidental in how things are working out in a way that if you put your hands to work, you wouldn't have made it like possible. Like,
no,
it's impossible to have that. Let's say I'm a very philanthropist guy and I want my kids to be invested in people. I can never plant that in them. Like that, there has to be something divine, something that comes out of their own heart. Getting that connection, like you mentioned, to have the opportunity to serve in this way, because I can bet there's a lot of people with a lot of will out there to do the whole mission experience, to be that have the heart for it. Maybe they've never heard about Honduras or this type of missions, or they don't have the means or the opportunities. And in your case, you have been exposed to these opportunities through one way or another, but you are constantly being called like to purposes that transcend our structures, or, you know, being profitable or whatever status quo or the standard is, but called to those in need, to those, to the poor, to the weak, to the, and it has impacted your whole family. Not only you, not only your husband, but each of you has had your own process, right? And this strong like family calling to help the one in need, and that you have the heart for it, because, well, you know people, there's from people to people, and I've known professionals like in the medicine industry, and you know you can get cold or stiff, will be the word, your heart becomes hardened, right?
Hard,
or you become insensible, your sensitivity, mm-hmm. you start lacking sensitivity, but you constantly are exposed to the situations that you want to be intentionally involved, and each time you feel that, okay, I need to do this. Like it's not a one-time thing, but you're fully invested. Every time you come down here, you have the heart to acknowledge, okay, I need to keep on doing this. This is something that's going to be a legacy that transcends me, because it goes way back. I know a little bit about the story, but whenever you're in the middle of it, it's crazy how it started before you were even here, and you probably will keep on going.
It will keep going.
And that's crazy.
And that is crazy.
There's already precedent, because I think the founder, like he passed away, and the build's still going, the building's still going, the work is still going, the deeds, the food is still getting delivered, the houses are getting built, you know, the bricks are getting laid, and it's still going. And it's, how can you explain that? You know, there comes a point. I mean,
I wish I could explain it.
There's no way to. Like,
there's no way.
This guy passes away, and somehow God makes, like, he takes care of someone else, you know, taking the rails, or someone else taking the part of whoever he's calling to a different season, or, you know, well, death is part of the journey, right? It's I don't know if to call it the end, but it's part of the journey. He's called to a different season, but God already, because it's bigger than us, he already has the willing. And even mm-hmm. though sometimes we're not willing, he deals with us. He deals with us. And there's no human way, possible way, that Zoila or you can talk someone into this craziness. You know, there's no possible way someone would have talked me into the craziness of the gospel other than me experiencing it myself mm-hmm. and getting these profound convictions out of my intimacy with the Holy Spirit and what he exposes me to.
Absolutely.
So Krista, for people who don't know, what are you focused on right now with Mission 922 down here in Honduras? I mixed Honduras with Honduras. In Honduras or Honduras, if you are from the States, what are things that are coming ahead, or what you're really looking forward to or excited that is happening in the near future?
Well, we actually, Marty and I are here for the week, and we're trying to do just some behind the scenes ministry work mm-hmm. With the family that works on out in Tasati. But then we have a medical team coming in June, and then we have I guess you would call it a regular team that comes down and just does more house building and like carnival type VBS activities with the kids. So we have a team that's coming in July, and they're kind of back to back, but that's exciting this summer because we haven't done a medical team in a while. And we're going to go into Montaña de la Flor, into one of the communities there, Tagamasapa, and do a medical clinic. And then we'll do another clinic in Tasate. And then when the other team comes in, we're actually hoping to build a house in the mountains. We've never built a house in the mountains before, so that's really exciting. Marty and I are going to go and I guess you'd call it scout the house this week. And kind of try to determine how we will get lumber there, how much it will cost. Another thing that that particular team is going to do is we're going to have a, like a 3-day VBS for the kids. So we've never really done that before. We've had like a 1-day VBS type activity, but we're going to try to work with some of our local churches in the States to donate materials. And then some of the ladies and men that are coming down will get together and put together a 3-day event for the kids. So there'll be music and games, and and it'll be more of an intentional focus on teaching them about, you know, who God is and how much He loves them. And so that's really, really exciting. I guess for the ministry part, we are, our footprint is in Tasate, and we're really putting a footprint there and in the surrounding communities, really trying to focus on relationships there, that it's not just a come in, splash and go. It's more of a come in and let's spend time there. Let's do life there. Let's know our neighbor. Let's love our neighbor.
In the medical teams, when we say medical brigades, that consists of mainly a medical consultancy. There's a team of physicians, right, that come and do give a maybe an examination to patients for free, and they could give a diagnosis or maybe prescribe some vitamins or basic over-the-counter medicine, right?
Right, right. It'll be one physician and then a nurse practitioner. And then some other medical assistants coming. It'll be a small team, but we're really excited. And she has been before, so she's bringing her family down. The doctor is, and then her sister's a nurse practitioner, and she's coming with her. So they will just do some basic care. But in Tagamasapa, there's a lot of needs there, a lot of malnutrition, a lot of breathing problems. It's really dusty and dry, and just the lack of not having the resources. So it'll be a really good thing for that community. We're hopeful for that.
The community of Tagamasapa in is near Tasate, right?
Yes, it's Montaña de la Flor. It's our, well, we actually see, when we go to the mountains, Montaña de la Flor, we go to San Juan first, and then Tagamasapa is next. That's the furthest I've ever been in the mountains. So that's the most impoverished community there, or in my personal opinion, that's, you know, I'm sure there's plenty more.
And basically, well, with a medical clinic, you address maybe symptoms or the problem in a way to alleviate the situation. But it would be nice to have maybe, I don't know who can we talk to in the community to imagine if dust gets to be an issue for kids, I don't know, paving the roads. I know those are different levels, right? But it would be nice to have any, have you ever know, I mean, is there a mayor in that city? I know this is the same mayor in Tegucigalpa. But it would be nice. I'm going to look into that, because that's the thing with development. I mean, of course, this help is needed, right? A momentary help, but addressing the problem from the root. Well, but of course, that's something the Hondurans have to deal with. It's just me, you know, because whenever I go or get exposed to situations, I'm like, okay, wouldn't the practical solution or the obvious solution would be this? Then you get to the scenario, maybe there's no funds. I know there's specific cases and a lot of things that are involved into that, but it would be nice, I mean, for people to look out this community, Tasate. I've done some research. I'm almost sure it's in Departamento, which is the equivalent to states in Honduras, Departamento de Francisco Morazán. It's a community or aldea. I think that's Aldea Altizate. It's really close to Huarica, which is it's a city in Francisco Morazán.
Yes, and if the road, if a donor out there wanted to come in and pave those roads, I'm sure that they would be happy to see those.
Some local authority, right? For sure. Or many different issues. I mean, the dust serves its purpose, but I know also the malnutrition, like the poverty in those communities. There's a lot of things to it, and I know to address it, I mean, it's a lot of work. But that would be the medical clinic. Then you also mentioned VBS, for people who don't know, Vocation Bible School, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like time to do fun learning, biblical fun learning with the kids.
Yes.
Kids teaching other kids, sometimes the youth teaching kids or elders teaching kids in a practical, maybe creative way. Mm-hmm. You could do drawings with the kids. You could do, one time I interpreted like a puppeteer show. Recordings of David and Goliath. It was pretty crazy, but. So that'll be VBS addressing the kids. Well, the Bible says, let the small ones come to me, right? Then we have, you mentioned the carnival, which is also a fun aspect to build relationship with them, to bond with them. You have different, I've been there, so that's why I'm also walking people through the experience. You have games, you have what we call piñata. I don't know how you say piñata in English, or if that's a
piñata. Piñata. We have popcorn and cotton candy and fun toys for the kids. And honestly, that's where people in our community back in the States, they are so engaged. People just want to help. People are good. They really are. And invariably, at least once a week, if not twice, I'll get a text from a friend to say, hey, I've got some... I cleaned out my kids' toy box and I've got some little toys that I'd like to send to Honduras or hey, I've got some stuffed animals that I was going to get rid of. And so would you want those for Honduras? And there are things just dropped off on my porch randomly, honestly, two or three times a week, just because people really want, maybe they can't come, but maybe they just want to give. So we have a good time. And the community gatherings that you've been to, we'll probably have at least one of those, if not two, where the communities, the three really major communities there, San Cristobal, Los Animas, where they're invited to come in, and we'll have word and worship around a bonfire. And that's another thing. We've had some grading done while we're, I don't know if you saw my pictures. Did you see my pictures? That's super exciting.
I was going to comment. I see you got my room done. But
yes.
Maybe not.
I was going to say, so we got the grading done, and we're looking for grass seed right now. We can, I guess Honduras really doesn't have a lot of grass, maybe.
Maybe. There's places. I'm going to, if you need some,
Women need some help finding lots of grass seed. We did find some at a small store, but.
For a court, for a soccer court?
Well, we just need grass to grow. So when it rains, when the rainy season comes, that all the dirt doesn't get washed away, and we just have problems. So that's going on, and we're doing a lot, but yes, we do want a soccer field. I really want a pavilion as well, something that would cover a large area, because we have a feeding program. And right now the feeding program is in the ministry building that the team stays in. So that's kind of like a setup for the feeding program, get that cleaned up, put it back together for the team. So I would love to have a outside kind of covered eating area, but large enough that you could also house our women's ministry so that it gets the women out of the sun. Because during the day it's hot.
Yeah.
And then at night, people sometimes don't come to the community events because it's dark and they have to walk. So that's kind of some barriers that we're working through, just trying to work with the community to decide what would best meet their needs.
That's great. Like adjusting the place to have more activities to do or to serve or enhance the ministry or the ministering that you're doing down at Tizate. Sounds great. And the relationship aspect of it was something new for me. my previous experience, or the only experience I had before, was with the Torch Missions, mm-hmm. which we did a lot of the food delivering, clothes delivering. We did a lot of house building, and me being a male, mainly I went on house building. But with your ministry, one of the cool aspects has been the emphasis or the priority that relationships are being given. But this is an excuse to enhance relationship, a bonfire, a carnival. I mean, it's a way to be intentional and saying, I want to spend time with you doing something. And you address different segments with a carnival, which, like we mentioned, is playing with the kids, the VBS, teaching the kids. You get to connect with the kids, and the adults with the kids as well. Then you can get to have, I don't know if we mentioned it, but you're trying to implement this ladies afternoon where you serve a cup of coffee and maybe some bread, which I was telling Krista previously, that's actually a tradition we have in Honduras. We call it café con pan, or café de la tarde, which is the coffee in the late afternoon. People normally have a cup of coffee with a piece of semita, which is a sweet bread that we have in Honduras. So that's part of the culture. I knew they were going to love it. People showed up and they expressed how they looked at you guys like untouchable, right? Like above, like Marty says hi to Monkey. I think it's the name of a guy over there. They nicknamed him Monkey or Mono. But we have never gotten to talk to you. And they were expressing how they loved this new enhancement to the ministering or the experience of getting to know Christoph. Because you normally play with, they were saying, you normally play with the kids, so the kids get to know you. But they wanted that interaction, that right. one-to-one. And that's what this event, this type of ministering allows, effective ministering. Because you get to bond, build relationships, so people opens up with you. They tell you their story. The language barrier you mentioned. The other day, last week, I was taking one of the guests that I had for Airbnb. She is Ukrainian, and she only spoke Russian.
Oh, wow.
When she came to Honduras, I assumed the war had something to do, but she migrated here, and she learned to speak English in Honduras. I mean, over the internet, but she was already living in Honduras when she started learning English. So she came here only knowing, I don't know if Ukrainian and Russian, but there was a language barrier over there. And normally I'm not exposed to this uncomfortable. Normally I'm the guy that knows, how to get along with everybody.
Right.
I understand you. And she spoke no Spanish and broken English. I mean, she was trying. I'm not being hard on her, but I couldn't get some of the stuff she was saying. And I knew she was not getting some of the stuff. I was enunciating a lot. So I was like, oh, so this is how it feels.
This is how Krista feels.
It sucks. Because, I mean, it also is different when you speak directly with someone, looking at them, if you were talking to that person. But with her, I was thinking maybe the use of an interpreter, but I wanted to be talking to the interpreter, and he would talk to her, and then she would talk to him back. And you lose something in the way. So I was, oh, okay, now I get it.
I understand.
I mean, you lose something. It is tedious. Now I get it. But yeah, so that's a great way to build relationship, to build community with them. And the bonfire, which is for everyone, right?
Absolutely.
I've personally been to a couple. I mean, it's been great, a great time to share. There's something spiritually going on over there for sure. Definitely, I mm-hmm. felt it. The atmosphere, I mean, it's fellowship, gratitude. People is where they want to be. They are all happy to be there, including myself, including you, including the teams that come here. I mean, it's a whole different game. Like whenever you're there, it's funny how a lot of things people would think of pleasurable or desirable, I get to experience, like having lunch at Chili's or doing a podcast afterwards or whatever I do on a daily day. But the highest, like, climax, let's call it, of feeling content and appreciative with my atmosphere in my environment is on those moments whenever, I know it's a mutual feeling, like everyone feels just at peace, like contentment or wanting to be there, or that it is meaningful and purposeful. And that's what goes on at a gathering, at a bonfire, whenever we have fellowship, whenever we have communion. So it's different expressions of fellowship, of camaraderie, of communion, of ministering, of doing life with people. And in the end, that's what we're called here to do.
That's what we're called to.
Do life with others.
Absolutely. That's what we're called for.
And it's so nice that you send the message that it transcends barriers, cultural, economical, social barriers, language barriers. And I think that's what heaven might look like, you know, all of us speaking the same language, understanding each other. And it's weird. It's kind of weird to be exposed to all of these differences, because when you're in the midst of it, it's real. Like, social barriers are real. Economical mm-hmm. barriers are real. Educational barriers are real. Cultural barriers are real. Language barriers are real. But I'm so grateful with God. I've given a lot of thought to this, for allowing me to be born and raised in the atmosphere that I want. Like, because I get to live both experiences. Like, thankfully, I've had my needs met. I've had good education. I've had family that loves me and support me. I've had exposure to the gospel. I have freedom. I have meritocracy. It takes a role in my life. I'm free to all of these circumstances. But I also, being born and raised in Honduras, we were talking about this with my cousin. It's also impactful for us, because you kind of live in a bubble. And in our case, it's right there. Because I got lost in Comayabuela, and I don't drive a lot in Comayabuela, and I use Waze a lot, and I had no data. I don't know what happened with my internet. And I was trying to get some coffee for David, like 50 pounds of coffee, in a transport company in Comayabuela. I got lost. And I was like, with my cousin, see, cousin, like, this is, there was like, they are also part of our city. How many people is here? Like, thousands and thousands. This is part of our reality. And the Comayabuela is old, and downtown is old. So look, this is part of, and it's like unfathomable that you 5 minutes away, or, you know, or we recall back to our youth or our teenage years, and you didn't even think that existed. Stuff like me taking for granted speaking English, like, everyone I knew spoke English. Being bilingual was, going to a private school, a bilingual school, having car, stuff like that. It was common. And getting exposed to the other side, to the guy that is at the other side whenever you're at the hardware store, they're part of the this reality, and the reality that our nation lives in. So, and I'm kind of in the middle, because I speak Spanish, I speak English. I tend to relate better with North Americans. I don't know why, because I'm Honduran, but my personality—I relate good with Hondurans also. Not that I don't do, but I feel very, very comfortable with North American culture. I feel very comfortable with the language. I feel very comfortable with the Hondurans. I get along, I'm very grateful, because I'm in a position where I am exposed. Mm-hmm. To both scenarios. And I like where I'm at now. And like I mentioned, like kind of joking before, but really, normally I understand not only how he speaks, but kind of where he comes from, how he thinks, you know. And I could also relate to a Honduran that works at a build site with us, because I've also worked with, I've hired maybe a relative of them, or someone they know, or someone that lives in their community. Whoever, so I know how to, I know where they come from, I understand the language, and that's very cool. I'm very grateful with God because of that, but it's very cool to be a part of that in that way, you know? And being exposed to those differences and see they're very tangible, like they are there, but rationalize them.
I think that's what we bring a lot of youth to Honduras with their families. We used to just do youth, like the parents couldn't or didn't come. And the pandemic brought about parents, which really has been a good thing because you see a lot of families come together and they're invested together and they serve together and it's beautiful. But I really think when I look at youth, I'm like, you are in such a great place mm-hmm. as far as an opportunity to see things that I didn't see until I was in my, you know, late 30s, early 40s. And you just, I mean, you have such an opportunity and you've been exposed to things that I never even knew existed. You know, I thought I knew what poverty looked like. You know, I thought I knew what a lot of things looked like, but yeah, even my girls, you know, coming at 9 and 12 and just seeing that everybody doesn't get up like you get up in the mornings and everybody doesn't go to bed like you go to bed at night. And there's just there's another world out there yes. of people that need you, you know, and we have things to give.
And it gives you perspective. I think it also gives you perspective. That's what I feel. If I look like optimistically at my background, in an optimistical perspective, I think me being born in a third world country actually has given me perspective. It has given me perspective. Mm-hmm. To see, it has even helped me, like, in my faith, spiritually, like, seeing how the Spirit is the Spirit, regardless of these barriers, and seeing how this influences, like, culture, like impact or influence your, how you conduct yourself, your spirituality also gets influenced by all of these factors that are a part of you, and being, in my case, having that perspective of where you come from, where my people comes from, and it helps me to set up a future for myself. Because, like I said, and I'm grateful for where God has positioned me, but because just being bilingual, let's go to the basic example of being something that I totally take for granted. I don't know what it's like not to speak English and Spanish, both two languages, at least two languages.
You've got a good vision of it now, right here. Yeah.
And it's common. That's very common in the States for you not to know any other language right. than English. But me being born in a country that, because commercially, like for business and stuff, people globally use a lot of English, right? So in here, if you have the means, it is a priority to learn English. So, and I am native Spanish speaking, so I have two languages, right? That helps me be a medium or in the future, like I said, wherever I me desenvuelvo, wherever I do work or life in, it's going to be a great advantage to bring people together to understand different approaches culturally of things or of how to sort problems out. So yeah, I'm very, very aware of that. And in your case, in the case of the youth that you bring, it also gives them perspective at a really young age. Because imagine not having this perspective and going through stages where you have to take pivotal decisions. Mm-hmm. Maybe this part of you was never activated or never because you were not exposed. Your perspective was not enhanced because you didn't have the proper experience.
Exactly.
And now you're at a place to take better decisions. A big one for me is I rather pursue what I feel is right in my heart and where I feel like I flow, like I can work and put when I say work is that put dedication into it. And I feel like I'm not working, like, oh man, hey, what I'm gonna do with my life? Like, I'm having such a good time that I'm like, okay, this is real life. Like, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. This is your, it's pretty cool for me. I'm gonna keep doing this. So getting to that point, you know, and being aware and appreciative and having gratitude towards, I think that's a big one.
I agree. I have a son in the room that Marty and I sit in the mornings, and it's live gratefully. And it's just, isn't that what it says? Live gratefully? Yeah, I think it is. It's just a good reminder to live gratefully for everything. even the little things.
And out of that gratitude, the big perspective shift that I have had through these experiences has been, ever since I was a teenager, I knew I wanted like to be successful or to just, you know, be at a good spot. Mm-hmm. But and me being little immature or not having the knowledge, I thought that related because of the system we live in, that related or yeah to money. But actually, there's values that go beyond that. Like there's intrinsic values that surpass, and money's. I like money. I'm not saying I don't like money. It's very, very useful, like for means, like to be, just to have access, you know, to do the stuff you want to do. However, that's not the end goal. Not even personal legacy, like, because I think the me of 10 years ago would rather run something for himself than someone else running something and being part of that. Regardless of you running it, but if to serve a better purpose. So I'm more in that spot now because I've seen the good that can, I've seen how, you know, it's bigger than me. I've seen how I'm now conscious of, you know, how small we are in comparison to all of that's going around us, but also how fundamental our roles are. And that has a shift that has come through missions. Because seeing how frugal or how people turn their lives around to come live here, or even people that, you know, dress very modestly. And I'm like, and that fulfills them. Like building a house for someone fulfills them. Like they lived in, people migrate here from here to the States. And those are people that were born in the States that know this is not the answer. Money is not the, not even being comfortable. I mean, having all your needs met, that's not the answer. I mean, there's something more to that. And that they come down here voluntarily and they're so frugal with money. And there's that I've never like, it's not that I've always chased money. I just knew I wanted to, you know, to be successful. But now I know I'd rather have my needs met, have provide for my, you know, my tribe, my family, my loved ones, have them provide a proper education. And if I have to sacrifice some extra pennies to do what I feel called to do or that transcends me, 100%. Without that, I've exposed myself to chasing money, getting, you know, burdens that, oh man, felt off.
That when I see what success looks a little different now.
Yes. And I see what I'm doing now and I'm like, literally sometimes I'm like, did I work today? And I got a lot done, but it was enjoyable for me. Other than maybe, you know, a position where you're better financially, but it sucks. I just felt in jail, incarcerated, or it just didn't work for me. So I prioritize, my priorities have not changed, but aligned. I think I have a better perspective now through these experiences. See how finite my life is and that I cannot just work for myself. Yeah. So you're going to come and be exposed to these experiences and not have your perspective enhanced. Imagine having 17, 18, well, 18 and above is the youth you bring. It's such a perspective enhancing experience that's going to come with them for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. And we've actually got some that came in spring break. They're coming back summer.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's cool. They were super excited.
I'm happy because you know how every trip is different, but I really connect with some of the people. And I'm glad when I get to see people again.
Isn't it,
you
know, funny how every trip is different? Yeah. And every trip is so good because every time I leave, I think, I will never have that good of a team. And then it's like the next whole trip is just as good.
And it makes me feel very...
in some way.
How can I say this without sounding? It makes me feel very easy. Like I'm very easy because, I love you guys. And then I love this crew as well. And, you know,
absolutely.
I also had a great experience here. And maybe I'm giving the same compliments away, but it's just true.
It's
just
true. True.
Every trip is different. It's nice. It's nice. That's why people keep coming. Honestly, of course, you don't do it for yourself, but you do feel good in the process. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you feel anxious. Sometimes you feel worried. You don't know what to do. But for the most of it, I mean, it's nice. It's very fulfilling. It's very fulfilling. And when you get the grasp of it, it's very fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Krista, it's been a pleasure. So that's hopefully the people get a little bit of the job you get done here. Well, not here, but down in Tizate. Communion and fellowship and ministry in whatever expression that might come with different segments, you know, bonding with people, just making sure you're setting foundation and how, I don't know if this translates properly to English, but setting roots in the community and staying grounded there, anchoring yourself with the community there and making them know that they are part of you, you are part of them, you're not going away. Also, some social projection through the food donations, through the house builds, through the clothes that you deliver, working in communities around Montaña de la Flor, which is where the Tolupanes, which is an indigenous tribe in Honduras, one of the indigenous tribes that still is around in Honduras, very forgotten, very nothing taken care of. They live in a lot of scarcity, in a lot of lack. It will be, thankfully, there's a lot of good-hearted people that are trying to reach that community and help and provide food, shelter.
Basic needs.
Basic needs, yeah. Food, mm-hmm. water.
Shelter.
Yeah. Every basic need for a decent human experience. And also, you have done some work here in Teusigalpa, right? Some houses in mm-hmm. Colonia Australia.
Yes.
I know this is not your first one. You've done some in the past. I've done a couple of house builds with you guys. And we can find you in social media, Project
yes.
World.
Yes, Go Project World.
Go Project World.
Go Project World.
Facebook.
Mm-hmm. On Facebook and Instagram.
Go yes. Project World. Mm-hmm. And if anyone would like to reach out to donate something or share some love in whatever expression.
Just reach out and have a question. Okay. Just message us.
Okay. And also be part of the experience. Well, it's a good thing you live around Atlanta. You live in a very, in an area where, well, we were talking about that at the beginning. Not now, but you used to be able to fly back and forth from Atlanta to Tegucigalpa. The drill already is a pretty straightforward trip. You already have the logistics. Whoever wants to come, just contact you. And
absolutely.
You can make that happen.
Make that happen.
Whatever. So you come in different seasons in the year, right? You come in spring break, winter. No, spring break, summer.
Summer. We'll do, we typically come in the fall. We've got a trip coming up in November, another medical brigade in November, right before Thanksgiving. And then winter break in February. So,
okay. So,
thank you for having me, Marco.
It was my pleasure. If you allow me, I really like to end my podcast with a prayer for my guest.
Absolutely.
Heavenly Father, thank you for this moment. Thank you for the time you've provided, for the life you've provided, for the breath of life you've provided for us to have this conversation. I pray that it has the purpose that you have commanded it to have, Lord. May it transcend whatever I can fathom or understand right now. I pray for Krista's life. I pray for her ministry, for her work, for her projects. May you be backing up and showing her your favor in each and every project and each and every scenario. In the name of Jesus, amen.
Amen. Thank you very much. And amen. Thank you.
Thank you for sticking till the end, guys. I would love if you can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can follow us as well in our podcast on Spotify at Marcos Podcast. I'm going to leave you the link below.